And here we are with part two of our end of the year roundup on Storage Unpacked. I'm still here with Mr. Chris Miller and Mr. Martin Glasbrough. I've been very formal. I don't know why. I just feel like being formal today. Maybe it's the end of the year.
Oh, we've all got the Christmas suits on, haven't we?
Yeah, exactly. You've got your little elf costume on, Martin. Yeah.
Chris is dressed up like Santa Claus. I can't see them.
Chris is dressed up like Santa Claus with his white beard on, and I'm not sure who I am. Am I the Grinch?
Yeah, I think so. No, actually, isn't that normally Mr. Mallow's role to be the Grinch?
Yes, true. Yeah, Chris will be the Grinch, and I'll have to be Father Christmas. Yeah,
wonderful.
So, in our first part, we talked about various different companies. We talked about what COVID had done. We talked about hype. We talked about acquisitions. And you jumped the gun a little bit there, Chris. But I wanted to talk about turkeys of the year, bearing in mind it's Christmas, and to say what's been a flop. Now, in part one, we talked about PowerStore, and we may have been a bit harsh about them, or not. But I was trying to work out what else we could class as being things that are continually hyped, which just never really come to fruition, a bit like virtual desktops, I guess. But edge computing and edge storage and edge computing, that just seems to me like people keep going on about that, but I'm not sure how big a one it is. My other is, which is a real bugbear here for me, is this whole idea of reuse of data from backups. And, all this, we can do all this analytics and we can do CDN. And I just think it's a dead end.
I've felt this a while about the secondary data market, or was kind of where we're looking at. I'm not sure. I've not really seen it. I've seen this come through a couple of times. I've seen it various phases as well. People have tried this before. They've tried it with databases, how you copy databases and use it for analytic workloads and do other things and move it round, extract it, potentially move it into a data warehouse, which is actually a genuine thing. But this whole data analytics, maybe it is. I don't know anybody who's really, apart from vendors, I don't know anybody who's really talking about it in enterprise. Oh, it's changed the way we work. It's made us millions. It's made us billions. Maybe it has. Maybe they just don't want to tell us about it.
It could be. I personally just think that if it was data that was unstructured data and you had petabytes of unstructured data that you had lying around and somebody said, do you know what? We can mine that. There's some value in it. And maybe there was some good reason for it. I could see that being practical. But when it's backups of virtual machines that run your application, that's got the data embedded in databases that could be encrypted and all sorts of other additional stuff. 90% of those VMs are basically the operating system. So you're not going to do any analysis on that data.
I'd ask you why if you're backing those up anyway, Chris.
And why would you be backing them up anyway? Unless you wanted them as a snapshot to do a fast restore rather than, that might be an option. But in general, you wouldn't. So I really don't see how, if your environment is hundreds of virtual machines running your applications, you could even technically mine any of that data to find anything useful. So I just wonder whether this is one of those things that's going to turn out to be an emperor's clothes, and it was a great ruse to get people to consolidate and move all of their data into these backup products that can do everything, but actually at the end of the day there's nothing really there.
So there were three copy data manager companies originally, weren't there? There was Delphix doing the databases one, Actifio for unstructured data, and Catalogic, which basically catalogued files and then you could do copy data management from among them.
Yeah.
Catalogic's pivoted out of that area a little bit. Actifio's gone through its refinancing. Well, not that we ever admitted it. And Delphix lost a CEO, and the founder had to come back and revamp the company. So nobody's made a crashing success of copy data management.
No.
Cohesity at least seems to be powering ahead. It had that great amount of new funding, so somebody really believes the company is going places. I think there should be some way. Secondary data can be consolidated and used for more than just being data protection material. Compliance is just a minor part of it, isn't it? Nobody's ever going to concentrate wholly on compliance. Data ops, it's a glamorous idea. Yep. Providing data for test and dev, that seems to be important. Providing data for analytics, I'm not sure that anybody's yet doing that in the secondary data market. That's more a data warehouse thing. Yeah. And Snowflake seems to be having an absolutely wonderful time there, especially with providing, say, data services that people can send their data sets that they put in Snowflake off to have a data service run on them, like being processed for some reason or other. I think Snowflake's got more of a grasp of what's going on in the data analytics area than anybody else at the moment.
I think when you look at it, if you look at, say, Cohesity is a good example, I guess, because they've got both data in an unstructured format and they've got data protection going on in the same platform. So you get a mix of both. I think if you were looking at it purely from saying, is this a better data protection consolidation solution? As in, you know, the way they're doing data protection, is it better? I'd say that, you know, those companies, them and Rubrik, maybe Haiku, have come at it from a different approach. And yes, they are easily beating the way that IBM work or Veritas work, and they're giving people like Commvault trouble. But they're not using that data for anything else that's going to be a super amount of value. Now, you highlighted the idea of using it for things like compliance and so on, but that doesn't generate business and money for the company. That fixes an operational issue that needs to be box-ticked somewhere. Whereas everybody was selling it as being analytics that could be then used to generate new income streams for the company. And that's the bit I haven't seen. I haven't seen anybody who said, we took all of our data from our thousands of VMs we run, and lo and behold, we found an opportunity to sell that data and or use that data to create a new business line. I've never seen that as a use case. So I just don't get it. I just think, yes, okay, it can tick the compliance boxes. It can find things like where people have used hidden social security numbers in things, and you have to identify personal data. But that's an operational challenge. That's not a money-making challenge for the business.
Perhaps we'll see a secondary data company buying a data warehousing company, or a reverse move.
We could do. And I think I'd be interested to go back and talk about the Snowflake IPO, because that was massive. I mean, I can't even think how much that was for. You've probably got the numbers in front of you, Chris, haven't you?
I think they pulled in several billions.
But the valuation was like crazy.
The valuation was crazy, and they had a massive funding round just before the IPO as well.
Perhaps it just seems more logical than anything that a company that can stream that data to a place where you can actually do something else with it, like perhaps a cloud, and then gives you some sort of interface that you can analyze that data, and it's the company that manages the storage of it and allows you to have that analytics on top. That seems perhaps to me to be more valuable than you trying to do that yourself on premises with your backup product.
Let me try and fly this. You can also always cut it out of the recording if it's crap. A data warehouse, it gets its data from some primary data store. There's some kind of process to suck the data from a primary data store and shove it into a data warehouse, and then it gets analyzed and squirted around. A secondary data storage company like Cohesity gets its data from a primary data store. It's done through backup, and then it processes and so forth. It seems to me both these types of organizations live off primary storage, and there just seems to be, why aren't the two kinds of things getting together? And they're both heading towards the cloud. They both have massive data stores, and they both want to give people access to these data stores for them to be processed, analyzed in some way. Surely there's some kind of overlap between what a Snowflake does and what a Cohesity or a Rubrik wants to do.
Okay. I'm going to try and break it down into something as simple as I can possibly say it, and then Martin can correct me where I get it wrong, but I'm going to give it a go. So I look at it and think that you have structured data and unstructured data. Structured data will typically be in some sort of hierarchical relational database, or nowadays NoSQL database. And you configure that database operationally to deliver transactions to the end user. So it's run in a way that allows it to match production requirements. So over time, you would hopefully archive records out of that primary database and put them somewhere else for performance purposes. And a data warehouse is effectively a better structured database that allows you to analyze the data that's in that environment. So instead of it being structured for operationally storing and retrieving records, a data warehouse is a better structured version for analytics and studying and analyzing that data from a performance perspective. And then you have something like a data lake where you completely throw away the structure and you extract the data into a flat file format or some sort of unstructured format, even if it is structured data. That allows you to run different sets of tools against all sorts of different data in one big, one enormous place. And the reason you separate the OLAP primary and the data warehouse is a performance an operational perspective. You don't want any analytics to hit the primary because that will affect performance, and you also want to run it slightly differently because it has a different I/O profile. And what did I get wrong, Martin?
Oh, it sounds about right, to be honest. The classic way of doing some of this is you do it with Oracle or something like that. You data guard it to a secondary instance and you work off that, use that. We obviously call those reporting databases, but what? Those things can grow and they can be large. I mean, you can run abstracts and you can move those into your data warehouse if you want a specialist data warehouse device. A lot of companies will just run it off a very large relational database. They don't really worry too much whether it's an Oracle database or whatever it is. The data lake thing, yeah, where you start moving things in and the things with data lakes, they get very complicated very quickly, and actually how you're processing. I think that's where we're kind of missing the trick, and this is where if someone's going to make a lot of money, is that, okay, I can get all my data into the data lake, but that's not particularly hard. But then doing something with it, how do I query it? How do I analyze it? This is where we start drifting towards rules of ML, AI type. And I'm still not sure where some of the secondary storage companies play in this space. I can see that they might do.
Go on. It's all too easy for a marketing person or a salesperson to say, oh, well, you analyze the data, you get actionable insights, and you can tell 25,000 more Christmas trees a year or whatever it is that you're supposed to do with the data. But you're right. This is just marketing fluff. Nobody actually seems to be doing it. We haven't come across revolutionary case studies where Company X has suddenly found the multi-million dollar revenue stream just by analyzing their existing data.
Yeah, and if you do that, typically what you've done is you've pulled that data out and put it into a different format, either a data warehouse or a data lake, because you need to use different tools to analyze that data than the format it potentially was stored in when it was in a backup.
We've been around for long enough. We've seen this done before. I remember way back, probably over 30 years ago, working on Teradata systems where we were running extracts from banking systems into Teradata to do things like fraud analysis, spend analysis. This is, yet again, it's nothing new.
Yeah,
it's absolutely different scale, but it's nothing new.
Any more in terms of the turkeys of the year?
I was going to say, Chris, I don't know if it's a turkey of the year or a hype of the year, but yet again, it's Internet of Things.
Yes.
Every year we talk about this because that's where all the data growth is going to come from. We're going to get all these millions and little records.
Log records, streaming devices.
Streaming devices. We talk about autonomous cars, autonomous vehicles. They're going to be streaming all this data away. But the horizon always seems to be a horizon, doesn't it? I don't think we're at a year where it's ever happened. And if you think about actually the other thing is, I mean, one of the big sources of this sort of data are airplanes. Well, nobody's flying anywhere anyway, yeah. So...
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I'm sort of exasperated in trying to, you know, get my head around it, because I think, on the one hand, I think that there are probably plenty of good examples, which are probably very anecdotal. You know, Hitachi are very good at doing that. They'll come up with all these anecdotal examples of how, for instance, you know, a city put in new sensors at this particular place and that allowed them to reroute the traffic better or whatever, or a university where they put a LIDAR in the corner of the room and it worked out that certain rooms were being misused by the number of people, so they could swap the rooms around and they didn't need to spend $100 million building new buildings or whatever it happens to be. And they're great one-off solutions that you put into an environment, and I'm sure they generate some great data. The question I always have with all of that sort of stuff, a bit like IoT, is how do you change that into something that can become a product that somebody can pick off the shelf and say, I need an X, and here's my X, and I'll just go and deploy it in my data center. In order to do it, I need this bit of hardware and this bit of software, and suddenly I'm getting data that I can do something useful with. It seems to be that every single solution relating to IoT is almost bespoke from day one, and therefore not scalable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose that throws us into a hype and turkey of year threat, and that's data-driven.
Yeah.
Everybody's data-driven. If that was one phrase I'd be quite happy never to hear again, but I suspect we're going to carry on hearing it for the next 10, 20 years,
so.
I suspect.
I'm afraid so. Okay, all right, let's move on then. And so Chris, you doorstepped me a bit here with your comments. And on this section, this is my We Said Goodbye To section. So we said goodbye to Stellus. Thanks very much. didn't hang around too long. We said goodbye to Datarim, but we've mentioned that one. You know, they're required. It's a shame to see the HCI side of things going, but, you know, at least some of the technology will live on somewhere in VMware. Violin memory / systems disappeared into StoreCentric.
Interesting. Bought by StoreCentric. And so we've got two companies, StoreCentric and Kaseya.
Yeah.
And they both seem to be setting themselves up as private equity-owned mini storage conglomerates.
Mm.
Buying a flash array here. Vexata, for goodness sake.
Yep.
It's astonishing buy. Retrospect. How do you put those two things together? But both of those companies, StoreCentric and Kaseya, seem to be doing very well, or at least their backers are pushing them very hard, and they're buying companies left, right, and centre. Good luck to Violin. Let's hope it makes its way.
Yep, yep. That's we talked about this a while back about this idea, Martin, of, you know, these consolidated companies that seem to be buying assets up. I haven't yet seen what the strategy is from any of them that makes me think that there is a strategy other than they're some pretty good assets that potentially could be used. So Tintree in DDN, I've spoken to them quite a bit, and they do seem to be trying to cross-pollinate some of their technology between the different platforms. So perhaps they've got a little bit of a strategy there. You know, they seem to be quite good.
Mm-hmm.
But StoreCentric just seem to have bought some very disparate assets up, like Vexata in retrospect, like an enterprise storage array and an SMB backup product. They just seemed so different. I don't really get it. So I don't know. Is this just buy the assets up and then try and do something with it? Or do you think there's a secret plan we just haven't got our head around?
I would like to think it was the latter. I suspect the former. I suspect they may be picking up some bargains, and now we're going to have to work out how to turn this into a technology strategy. I did wonder if perhaps something like StoreCentric was going to tell themselves into the SMB, SME marketplace, where they become that company you just go and deal with. You talk to them and they sell you stuff. Whatever problem you've got, we've got a solution for you. And they give you a nice pane of glass to manage it. Whether it's going to fit into enterprise, I don't know. We've got enough companies trying to play in the enterprise without somebody else coming along. And that's also it's a very difficult sale into an enterprise saying, okay, we've got all these products. We're going to replace everything you've got. Because if we don't replace everything you've got, we don't necessarily have a value proposition for you.
Mm.
And they're going to look at you and say, well, okay, so that's a multi-year, multi-million dollar project on a company which isn't proven. I don't think so. We'll carry on talking to the people we've always spoken to.
And EMC tried this. Look, you think about it. EMC went out and bought Mosey, Iomega. They bought a whole load of what seemed like very odd SMB type purchases.
Wasn't Retrospect one of those?
Yes.
I think it was at one time.
Dance Retrospect was, yeah. Which I think they bought, I can't think what year it was now, but I think it was. And you just think, why would you be trying to play in a market that isn't your market? You know, and eventually they sold them off, didn't they? So, you know, they were got rid of. And I just wonder, that's why I'm still trying to work it out. But there you go. So NKS, you mentioned that one, Chris, that went. Stillwise branding. Stillwise is now officially dead in IBM. It's now all flash system.
It's all flash system. Ed Walsh, the boss of Stillwise, one of the founders of Stillwise, left.
Yeah.
Goes off to run a completely new company, leaving Eric in charge of things.
Yeah.
Doing a great marketing job.
Yeah. No comment.
Stillwise was always a silly brand.
Yes. Well,
because it was always compression.
Yeah.
And that was fine. You know, it was I think they reused the name, thinking the name would be just a good brand name, perhaps. That seemed to be it. But anyway, it is no more. Object Engine, you mentioned that going, which is very interesting to see that happened. And then the last one here, I thought would be really good to see, get your opinion first. And this whole idea of Intel selling off its storage business, except Optane, to basically, I think, focus on x86.
I think, why is it keeping Optane? It's possibly making a tiny bit of money.
Yeah.
But the revenue from Optane must be a paltry fraction of the revenue from Intel's NAND business. And that's not got a margin good enough for it to keep. So it's selling that off to SK Hynix in some incredibly long-term convoluted deal.
Yeah.
So why is it keeping Optane? And somebody suggested to me, well, it's dead simple, isn't it? Xeon plus Optane equals an AMD killer.
Mm-hmm.
Because AMD can't use Optane. Nobody other than an x86 server vendor can use Optane, and that's that. And that's what makes Optane worth keeping. It prolongs the life of Xeon.
Yeah. So Martin and I had a theory about this, that Micron should partner with AMD and bring their version of Optane to the market with AMD, so that there is a competitor.
And ARM.
And also ARM, that was in our little thing. But I think, without me trying to dig down into the technicalities and get it completely wrong, the only thing I think that's a challenge there is that they use a different version of the DDR4 protocol, don't they? They call it DDR. Mm-hmm. I would call it
DTR.
DDR or TTR, something like that. There's a modified version of the protocol. And I'm not sure where that's baked in. So is that baked into the chipset and everything else that sits around the processor? And is that something AMD could replicate if they were in partnership with Micron?
Well, I'm sure they could replicate it. Forgive me for being dumb here, but what on earth is Micron waiting for? They've got this big fat target, and everybody knows Optane isn't going to be made available for AMD. It's a wide open goal for Micron. Mm. He's not making enough money supplying Optane chips to Intel. The blummin' Optane fab, half of it sitting idle, just sitting there chewing up money, not producing anything. Micron have simply got to sell more chips, and AMD servers and ARM servers are the obvious place to do it, because it's a competition-free zone. Yeah. They won't have to fight Intel for the business.
I'm sure
there are people in, there must be long-term reasons why this isn't working or isn't happening yet. It must be a difficult thing to do, but surely from a marketing point of view, that these two vast markets available to a Micron, which have the same DRAM's too expensive, we need something between DRAM and SSDs, please, attributes that the Xeon server market has. Why isn't something happening?
It's a fascinating one that I think we've talked about a number of times, and just why is Micron not selling Optane like you'd think they would be? Bearing in mind that the partnership with Intel went ages ago, you just think they'd be absolutely trying to really ramp this market up. And maybe it's they can't make any money in it. Maybe they're still somehow tied to Intel. Maybe there's just stuff behind the scenes we just can't sort of get our heads around or understand.
Micron are very good at layering 3D NAND. Or Intel, come to that. Mm. So I would have thought that moving from the current 4-deck Optane to 8-deck Optane and onto 16-deck Optane would technically be achievable. No doubt it would have a lot of problems with it, but it must be technically achievable. And that would make the cost structure of an Optane die much better.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Fingers out. Put some oomph behind it.
And if not, just come and talk to us. Explain what the challenges are, or if they are going to do it, even better. I'd really love to understand where they're going to go with it, because it just seems to have been so quiet.
You're right, Bruce. His big target is Intel. Intel have problems in as well. They're ripe for some really great competition to come along, and that will, if they suddenly find they've got big competition in this space, in the server space as well, Intel have a problem. Intel have already beginning to hit a problem at the desktop. AMD are making inroads, certainly within the enthusiast market. So yeah, I could, and even in the server market as well. So, but Fred Ripper and what's their high end? I can never remember
Epic.
What they call their
Epic.
High end.
Epic.
I mean, yeah, I do think that Intel could have a problem if AMD and Micron had started to get together, and ARM servers could also cause some problem.
So we'll just have to wait and see on that one. But here's an interesting section: missing in action. So here's a list of companies that we used to hear lots about, which I don't know where they've gone. So Formulas Black. What was the last?
Still around.
Are they?
Occasional mail messages from them saying attend an online seminar and so on. But how much longer can it go on for?
It's like the Black Knight, isn't it? I'm not dead. Flesh wound.
It's only Formulas. Is Formulas Black Cyrus Black's brother? Is it something out of a Harry Potter series?
Yes, he is, yeah.
It uses his dark materials.
He was the nice brother.
Or something like that.
But they just seem to just disappeared completely. And you say you get the occasional email, but I don't see anything from them. Another company that seems to have gone very, very quiet is Infinite.io. You remember their little NAS accelerating appliance.
Accelerate NAS by getting metadata processed much, much faster.
Mm. So I'm not sure.
And also, I'd put in that rough area hammer space. That also seems to be a little bit quiet.
Right.
Though I'd never...
We spoke to them earlier in the year.
We did. And the last thing I saw from them was, and I haven't done it yet, but on the list, is they've done like a freemium version where you can get like a 10 terabyte download and try it out. So okay. I think they're still doing stuff. I need to go and have a look at that. But yeah, it's not as... They haven't been as busy in terms of bringing out new features or new technical stuff that we would, I guess, we would expect them to. But you're right.
Perhaps they're hunkering down, just waiting out the pandemic till business picks up a little bit and they can actually go talk to people face to face again.
Yeah. Do you think Deterra are doing the same thing?
I'm sure they're hunkering down. They had really good year. They got the OEM deal with Fujitsu. They've got a partnership deal with HPE, as have a lot of other people. I wouldn't write them off at all. Mm.
Okay. And as a joke, I put Memristas on here. It suddenly dawned on me, I haven't heard about Memristas for a good 12 months. And for 10 years, Memristas were the future. They were...
Yeah, 2022 is the year of Memristas.
Oh, is it?
Yes, 2022. Okay. Yeah.
Memristas were garlic bread, you know. It was the future.
Yeah.
And but they just seem to have gone really quiet. Again, HP aren't talking about them. Maybe it's, maybe we'll just sit in the background and one day this device will turn up that will solve all our problems and it will be the Memristas. No, maybe not. Okay. Right, now, we're going to move on to another section and Martin hasn't done his bit for this. Irritating, but never mind, we'll push on. And anybody who's in the US will have no idea. Anybody outside the UK will have no idea what we're talking about. But... in the UK, there's a program called Room 101 where they basically put products into the room into the room they would never want to see again. And I thought it might be fun for us to sit and think about what we think would be the storage products we would never want to see again.
I was going to say, but it's a bit harsh, this, Room 101, because you said only people in the UK, because Room 101 obviously is a reference to 1984
and
George Orwell's.
But it was done the other way around, wasn't it? So Room 101 in 1984 was the place they sent you to face all of your fears and basically to break you. That was the idea of Room 101.
Yeah.
Whereas the modified TV series is already... Well, did it start as a radio program? It must have done. That sounds to me like it's a Radio 4 thing that went on to TV. But obviously the TV program is about putting those things into Room 101 so you never have to see them again. So, Chris, you give me two interesting ones. We'll start with the first one. And I'm really fascinated to understand what it is you don't like about holographic storage. I mean, come on, Superman.
Martin's been emphasising this every time again through this, saying so-and-so, it's always going to happen next year.
Yeah.
Holographic storage was absolutely wonderful. It's going to happen next year. And next year, it's going to happen the year after that. It was always far too difficult to put into a product. Its performance always sucked. The difficulty of making it a product was enormously difficult. Please go away and never come back again.
Is that too harsh, Martin? Do you think that's an unreasonable comment?
No, I don't think it's an unreasonable comment. It's one of those, it's always going to be the year. And who knows, perhaps we'll all have retired when it really is the year.
Oh, we know that actually DNA storage is going to render holographic storage redundant, as Chris himself will tell us later on.
Yes, we'll come back to that in a second. Yes. Okay, and your second one, Chris, was floppy disks. And again, I'm like, why are you so unhappy about... And let's qualify this, first of all, because there were floppy disks and there were stiffy disks. So your original...
This is getting a bit rude.
Your original floppy disks... were literally floppy, you know, 8-inch drives and so on, 5 1/4 inch. But then when we got a bit further on, we had the 3 1/2 inch drive, which was a stiffy, which was a hard cased floppy drive. So do you mean the original floppy disks?
Both.
Oh, both. Okay.
Because both of them expose the reading surface to the outside air. This seems to be an absolutely stupid idea to me. And the number of times I saw the actual real floppy disks with creases in them from being bent.
Yeah.
How could anybody take this as a serious storage medium? And then the little ones with the sliding gate you could open. Oh, look, I could write on here while the thing's running with a pencil. I mean, for goodness sake. This is just Toyland, isn't it? They're not serious.
So I'm guessing, Martin, that Chris did not listen to Ask Matt Anything a couple of weeks ago, where Matt explained why this is not a problem, why you can have creases in the media and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I was going to say floppy disks. I mean, it's Christmas, so it's time for a funny story. Way back at the start of my career, we had a non-technical manager working in a technical area. And this is just when the start of computer viruses. And somebody decided they were going to really wind this chap up. So they got a hole punch. And they punched a load of holes in a 5 1/4 inch drive. And ran and Gates said, oh, I think we've got a computer virus.
Like a disc brake.
At which point, it just goes into meltdown. And people just turn all machines off and everything. And it was just one of those. It's like, no. Really, that's not how.
So, what did they do? Did they like take the disc out and sort of move it around and go, look, there's a hole in it. There's something gating it. Excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, don't you love people who fall for things like that?
It's a floppy disc eating monster.
See, I'm not sure. I can see holographic storage. I can see, bin it, never want to see it again. But we grew up on floppy disks. I mean, not literally, I didn't eat them or anything. But, you know, we grew up using floppy disks. And I'm not sure whether that's a technology I'd want to get rid of.
We all had our little plastic racks with them in, didn't we?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And put little sticky labels on the outside.
Boxes of
them. And after a while, what you wrote on the sticky label would get overwritten with another sticky label and another sticky... Oh, for goodness sake.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Amateur time.
Okay, all right. I'm still on the fence on that one, but I'm going to give you my two. So the first one's maybe a bit technical, but I went through many, many years of having to recover the data of hard disk crashes when we didn't have RAID. And it is the most mind-numbing job in the world to recover individual tracks of data and try and work out whether you can get files back. And it's the job that should never, ever have to ever be done again. And thankfully, it hasn't really been needed because we've got RAID now. And as if you're doing it properly, we should never see it again. But I never want to see another hard disk crash in a manual recovery. It is so painful. And that is my...
There are people in Crawl who are crying listening to this.
This is
their skill set.
I was going to talk about Crawl.
This is my obligatory mainframe reference. I'm talking about mainframe disk drives that used to use something called ICK DSF, which it was a tool written by some sort of sadist in IBM because the language, the syntax was just impossible to understand. I could never get it to work, and I wasted hours and hours on it. That's my first one. My second one is DNA storage, which I just don't get. I just can't see how we're going to store data in DNA. I do not understand it.
Is that a technical lack you've got there, or is it just that you think the whole idea is basically stupid?
I think it's one of these things where somebody said, okay, look, we could create a DNA strand of data, and we could reread that, and we could look at the pairs, and we could come up with some sort of coding algorithm that allows us to use, what is it, ACEG, is that the DNA letters? So you've got like 4 bits, haven't you? So you've got basically whatever 4 bits is, that's not octal, what would you call it? Like half octal, call it half octal.
Quaternary or something?
Yeah, something like that. So you've got a four numbering system. So I can see how that would work, and that makes a lot of sense. The challenge I have is that DNA isn't perfect, so you have to add error correction in there somehow. But how do you store and retrieve strands of data if you have no way of working out how to store and retrieve that information? So, for instance, on a floppy disk drive, to use your reference, Chris, you know that when you want to find a piece of data, you go and look at a track, or nowadays you look at a LBA area, and the data you're looking for is in that particular place, and you read it back. If you've got a soup of DNA, how do you find the strand that you want to bring back?
You take a sample of the soup.
Yeah.
You put it into a DNA sequencer, and it comes up with all the individual strands, and it uses error correction as well to get the best match for a particular strand. And the strands, as well as being encoded with data, are encoded with numbers, which is their position in the sequence.
Yep.
So the strands can then be all put together in the sequence. And you then got your 4-bit groups of four letters at a time. You decode that back into binary, and hey presto, you've got your input file read again.
So it's a bit, it's about as efficient as LTFS, effectively.
Oh, it's wondrous. It takes hours and hours to do this sequencing.
So that's the bit I just don't get. I mean, if the aim is to produce a long-term storage medium that potentially you could retrieve this stuff in 50 or 100 years' time, on the one hand, I think, yes, really clever, could be really good. But you only have to look at optical disk and the BBC Time Doomsday Project and the big optical disks to know that having a reader to read stuff in the future is really tricky. And although DNA is effectively universal and doesn't need a reader, you still have to understand who encrypted it in what way, or how you, what the encrypting or the encoding algorithm is. If you don't know that, you're stuffed. So
and who knows? It might mutate anyway.
There is this also that, isn't there? You know.
What I find fantastic is that you can put these DNA sequences and actually put them in living cells, and as long as you get the right sort of sequences, they won't interfere with the cell's operation. And the cell, as it goes through its processes, will divide itself into two new cells. And hey presto, the two new cells both have copies of the injected DNA sequences carrying data.
Redundancy.
And so if you store these DNA sequences in living cells instead of in glass vials like semi-fossils, you have the things being replicated endlessly. It's
Johnny
the
Mnemonic.
Whole idea is so utterly fascinating to certain scientists that they think this must be wonderful. We must use this. We must put films in orbit, or we must do other things just to show how wondrous the technology is.
Is this like Johnny Mnemonic? Is it?
Johnny! Yeah, this is the method for Johnny to go around. They actually took out some DNA from his blood or something and read off the
put the stuff in his brain and took it back out again. Maybe Johnny Mnemonic should have been DNA storage.
Johnny DNA Mnemonic. Yeah. Sorry. I think you're right. I think DNA storage is very sexy technically, but come on.
Yeah, absolutely. Martin, did you have anything you wanted to...
I do, actually. You mentioned something which I think really needs to go in my room 101. Optical drives.
Yeah.
Optical drives.
And optical drive libraries. Every now and then somebody will turn up and try and sell us an optical drive
that
library.
Still exists. Wow.
And I don't get it. I really don't understand it. I just wish people would go away, because everybody now, every now and then somebody will come up to me and say, I've just discovered optical drives. They're going to, it's going to revolution the world. Get rid of your tape libraries. Get rid of your tapes. You're not going to need those. We'll just have those. And I just don't see it. So you optical drive, certainly optical drive manufacturers, certainly for those which go into libraries, just go away and leave me alone.
So I remember having some optical drives somewhere. Can't remember why. But I remember them being sort of a bit thicker than a DVD, sort of not quite, maybe 2 or 3 millimetres thick, and in a quite hard case. And then they looked sort of a greenish when you held them up to the light. Sort of.
Okay, so those sound like the Panasonic phase change devices?
Yeah. And remember thinking, it looks great, but I think the density was horrendous. It wasn't really that good. I think that was their biggest challenge. Mm. And then Hitachi did an optical drive that you could store and retrieve things automatically with. Michael Hay showed me one once at one of their events where they were using it like it was like an optical jukebox, I think they called it. So they could store and retrieve data on this thing.
Yeah.
And it was, technically it worked, you know, it was fascinating. But I just don't think the drive density ever got there with optical.
It never had the cost structure to make it competitive with tape.
Mm. I think that's the problem.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's the first one, Martin. Do you have another one?
Do I have another one? Yeah, bare metal recovery.
Bare metal recovery. Bare metal, oh, yes. Wow.
Because it's this idea that you'll back up an operating system image and you'll recover your system from that. No, you're never going to do it. You're either going to redeploy or you're going to recover from a snap. You're never going to go to bare metal recovery.
Yeah, and it never really worked.
Stop selling them.
I mean, because some of it relied on Pixie booting and various other things, and it never really worked.
Oh, the Veritas one was horrible. You ended up installing Veritas and then using that to pixie boot and do things. It was just horrendous. It was, oh no. By the time you'd actually figured out your bare metal recovery, you would have been better reinstalling the whole machine and reconfiguring it by hand.
I did some work for a company who, actually, funny enough, they had a massive ransomware hit. So I can't really say who it was. But in their environment, somebody thought in their infinite wisdom to store the bare metal backup image on one of the other drives on the same physical machine. So they did a bare metal dump of the machine, or at least enough to reboot the OS, onto one of the data drives on another drive. Then they backed that whole lot up using the backup product. And I said to somebody, so when you want to recover this, and the thing you need to start with is the bare metal image, which is now on a data drive sitting in your backup system, and in order to bring that back you need the machine that you're going to bare metal boot to be there, how are you ever going to recover this? And clearly nobody had actually looked at it at that level of detail and thought, oh yeah, that doesn't work. It's like, you know, reverse inception. But I never used bare metal recovery ever. It was just a waste of time. That's a good one. I like that. I think that's a really good one. That definitely never wants to see the light of day again. So bearing in mind we've talked about all of this year, what do we think we need to think about for 2021? Have we got any idea what might be on the horizon, if apart from another year of sitting in our spare rooms looking at each other over video cameras rather than going to conferences?
I think about June, every salesman in the world is going to go mad.
Yeah.
And you just if you're working at an end user, you're just going to be fending off visits because they haven't seen you for years or what feels like years, and you could probably eat out every day for the next 5 years as they try and work it. Because basically, I think most of the sales teams, and I'm really apologise to people who sales, their expense accounts must be a disaster now because they've not spent any money on them. So they're probably thinking, I've got no air miles, I've got no reward points. It's just gone horribly wrong for them there. So they're all going to be running out there trying to take people out. And they'll want to come and see you.
So we need to invest in, around sort of September time, in companies that do diet products or health products and, you know, physical training things, because people will have eaten out for 3 months, got morbidly obese and now want to lose all the weight after having eaten out all these free lunches from their sales vendors coming to take them out.
Well, I worry about Mr. Mellor's health, because when he starts going to conferences, potentially, there's going to be all these people who've got expense accounts they've not used for a year, and they're going to want to keep their runway up on their expenses.
That's a worry.
Chris, you're going to be drinking the finest wines, eating the best meals.
No change there then, really, Chris. You know?
I must arrange to have calls on my mobile phone that I have to take outside for good reception, which lasts a long time.
Yeah. I think that's
Hammer discs. We'll see hammer discs in 2021.
Will we? Do you think we will?
I think we'll see a ceremonial launch of a hammer disc from Seagate before the end of the year.
I'm really hoping that they use MC Hammer in the advertising. Oh,
please.
I mean, it is just so obvious the worst possible marketing route you could go down. It's almost like the David Brent of marketing to, you know, we know he uses Simply the Best, doesn't he, when he's doing his training course. You could do Hammer Time with MC Hammer advertising your hard drive product. And I've just thought of another thing that could go into our storage room 101, and that's any storage video by Hitachi that features Mr. T. I don't know if you've ever seen those, but there are some pretty awful videos where Mr. T did a whole lot of advertising for Hitachi, and they were pretty awful. I'll try and find them for the show notes, but yeah. If you haven't seen those, Chris, they are... You must have seen those.
No, Martin, I haven't, and I'd dearly like to see them.
They are bad.
Oh, other things for next year. IBM.
Yeah. Split.
IBM?
The split.
Yeah.
Oh, the split. Yeah. Yes.
But it'd be very interesting to see what that looks like, and we'll finally get some clarity about what UCO and what IBM look like going forward.
So we had a bit of a feedback from one of our listeners called Jared, who came back and said we'd misunderstood the split, and that it's not going to be the storage stuff being shipped out, that it's only the sort of the consultancy, the services side.
Services side.
So I think from what I've read, IBM are being quite misleading about the way they're describing it, because they're almost saying it's like a split between cloud and infrastructure, but it doesn't seem like that. So some clarity on that, I think, would be really interesting.
Mm. I think we'll see the storage side of IBM. I think they're going to be going out a computational storage drive. I think they're... Andy Walls and the other flash people inside there have got their sights set on that sort of thing.
I'm still interested, like we said earlier, but to see where that's going to head, though, because I think there's a lot of challenges to fix in that area first, to work out how they're going to be usable. And it almost, if they're not careful, it could be a technology without a problem that it's fixing. It could be just, you know, it looks great and it is amazing, but coolness factor doesn't get you into developing a product you can sell to a business. It has to have some sort of use case, and it has to fix a problem. So I'd really love to see more of that level of detail out of it. I just don't think we've seen it.
Pentalevel cell flash, 5 bits per cell, yes, flash.
It's sort of being mooted, isn't it? You hear words and people talking about it without saying there's a product out there, but we do hear talk about it. And I wonder with that, Chris, if you've got an opinion as to how you think that might appear.
I think it might appear when we have 150 plus layers in 3D NAND, and then the overprovisioning needed to make PLC flash a long enough life with SLC caches and so on, and zoned SSDs will be worthwhile. But at the moment, I think PLC has a big question mark over it, whether it's actually worth bothering with at all.
Mm. My theory is that we will start to see multi-level drives, in the sense that because they'll get so big and we'll have zone drives, we'll be able to zone a particular zone to have a certain level of bit density. So you can say, I'm going to have this section of the drive as PLC, this section of the drive as QLC, and that might even be dynamic over time. And what that will allow you to do is to archive off your colder data into the PLC area, because it's only ever going to be read. Maybe you only have a read-only section that's based on PLC, and the drive becomes a multi-zoned drive with each section being a different type of storage.
You're not just a pretty face, are you?
I don't think I'm even a pretty face.
It's a good job it's a podcast.
It's a good job it's a podcast.
Ruler drives are going to come, I think, in big way next year.
Yeah.
And the longer ones will have so much real estate inside them that you could have vastly improved capacity.
Yeah.
And having zoned SSDs inside that kind of capacity makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah. And I think that's why they're not trying to leap in and say, look at us, we're going to do PLC drives, because people's assumption will be the whole drive has to be PLC. And I don't think that's how they'll use the technology. I think the manufacturers that are clever will mix and match, and that's what you'll see. And that already exists today. You know, they'll have areas that are SLC, which you write to first, and then as it cascades out to QLC. So I'm not sort of inventing something that doesn't exist already, but I just think they'll become more flexible with that, and we'll have zones that are read zones versus write zones and stuff like that.
Western Digital would applaud that idea of zoning,
yeah.
And Kioxia also have a semi-zoned idea, which they're working on as well. And if Kioxia and Western Digital get together and somehow make their two schemes compatible, I think the industry will just have to follow suit.
Yeah. Interesting. So anything else? I think because we've talked about a hell of a lot again there. Anything else we can think of?
Oh, the only thing I was going to say, things which we won't see.
Yes.
We won't see the death of hard drives.
Nope.
No.
And we won't see the death of tape.
Nope, absolutely not.
However, we may see the death of jukebox optical drives and holographic storage.
Absolutely. And we'll be there to applaud it.
And I leave you with rumours that a Memristor startup is on its way.
Fantastic.
As well.
I'll be putting all my money into it after I take it all out of my tulips and money I invested in the South Sea bubble. Yes. Okay. Well, guys, thank you very much. I really wish you a great Christmas. I hope you have a wonderful time, and that we can look forward with a bit of fun and jollity to trying having a more enjoyable 2021, and at some point getting together so we can record in person and have a bit of fun then. I think that'd be really good.
Yeah.
The stories, beers as a physical event.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wonderful.
But for now,
thank you.
Thanks, guys, and catch up with you in the new year.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.